be in that position anymore. It could be a dream a while ago, but now it doesn't seem like to be a viable dream. Now you look at the economic situation of the U.S., for instance. Since 2008, America's national debt has surged nearly 200%, reaching $27 trillion as of October 2020. Well, to gain a better understanding of this ever-growing debt, we have to, you know, open up the whole research closet, you know, where we look at like the details and breakdowns of what is going on and is happening with the American economy. But the economists throughout the world, they are suspecting and they're anticipating a collapse of the artificial economic growth that the United States of America has been able to generate, create, and is the core and sole reason why it can dream to rule the world. Now, this was the economic situation. What about the social situation, the social fabric of the United States of America? You look at their conditions, social conditions, homeless people, you know, divorce rate. You look at the rapes. You look at like, you know, just stealing and gangsters and the mobs and stuff. You see that that society socially is collapsing, if not has already collapsed. Political situation, the democracy, the liberal democracy, nobody wishes to have it anymore. You know, it's just a failed model that the world has witnessed, that the last 200 years of social democracy have been a disaster for the entire world. Bottom line is that the U.S. is in no position to lead the world. And the Islamic civilization, the new Islamic civilization, is something that we need to read up on, and that is the second phase of the Islamic Revolution and manifesto that the leader of the Islamic Republic, the leader of the Islamic Revolution and Islamic Ummah has issued. It's available on Khamenei.ir. Go take a read, and this is what the future looks like. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says it is the duty of the U.S. to return to the 2015 nuclear deal and fulfill its obligations under the accord. In a joint press conference with his Turkish counterpart, Zarif underlined that the moment the United States fulfills its commitments, Iran would be prepared to fulfill ours.
It is the duty of the United States to return to this agreement and to fulfill its obligations. The moment the United States fulfills its commitments, we would prepare to fulfill ours.
Zarif also denounced a U.S. decision last month to slap sanctions on Turkey over the country's purchase of the S-400 Russian air defense system. He said the sanctions have no significance. Elsewhere in his remarks, Zarif hailed relations with Turkey, noting that ties will deepen when the U.S. adopts more reasonable attitudes. For his part, Cavusoglu said Turkey has always supported the nuclear deal, expressing the hope that the Biden administration would return to the JCPOA and lift sanctions on Iran.
I hope that with the Biden administration, the United States' return to this agreement and cooperation on the nuclear issue is restored. In this way, God willing, the sanctions and embargoes imposed on brotherly Iran are lifted.
Zarif arrived in Turkey as part of a tour of countries of the South Caucasus aimed at building support for the creation of a regional platform that would include Armenia, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Iran, Russia, and Turkey, and encourage cooperation between the countries. The initiative was proposed following a ceasefire agreement in November that halted weeks of conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan over the separatist territory of Nagorno-Karabakh.
I think the meeting was very important. Both sides have a lot in common and many issues were discussed regionally and economically. The most important issue on the agenda was the Iran nuclear deal. And now with the new U.S. administration, there is a hope for this deal to be revived.
Zarif also met with Turkish President Erdogan, where the two discussed expansion of bilateral ties, as well as regional cooperation in Syria, Iraq, Caucasus, and ways to restore stability in the region through synergy. This meeting is seen by many as a door to open negotiations between Turkey and the U.S. to revive the 2015 nuclear deal. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Public and private sector workers staged a nationwide 24-hour general strike to denounce government measures adopted to counter the spread of coronavirus disease in Italy. The industrial action, called by the Confederation of Base Unions, COBAS, was joined by public servants and self-employed workers in several cities, including Milan, Rome, and Naples. In a note, unions have explained that the ongoing health crisis has exacerbated a structural crisis of the capitalist economy with a generalized impoverishment and a worsening of living conditions for millions of male and female workers. Also, students and teachers of Italian high schools held rallies in Rome and other cities, demanding a prompt return to the classroom after almost 10 months of remote learning.
We are staging a protest to reiterate that schools must be a priority in this country. Just a small amount of the recovery fund is destined to the school system. Students are sick and tired of distance learning and are dropping out of schools. Many are falling victim to depression.
Students across Italy have been holding demonstrations, open-air lessons and strikes in protest over the adoption of the distance learning policy by the government in response to a second wave of COVID-19 in October. About 10 million students have been affected by coronavirus restrictions in Italy, while schools have remained open in most European countries.
We demand more classrooms, transport to school and better access to education. Distance learning is not working. Many families cannot afford providing digital devices to their children to attend internet lessons regularly. Our families get poorer by the day as our parents lose their jobs.
As if the COVID crisis and its grave effects on the Italians weren't enough, Italy has also been hit by a political crisis with Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte resigning earlier this week, forcing the country's head of state to start a round of formal consultations with all political groups to establish if a new government majority can be formed.
Talks between Italy's President Sergio Mattarella and party leaders to resolve the government crisis concluded on Friday, with the country on the brink of a crashing socio-economic failure. President Mattarella must now decide on the way forward and ensure Italy a new government. Max Civili, Rome.
Israeli occupation has denied COVID-19 vaccine to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Israeli parliament said Palestinians living under Israeli blockade in the Gaza Strip will receive no vaccine. Palestinians say the move is aimed at pressurizing resistance groups to release Israeli soldiers arrested during the Israeli aggression imposed against the Strip since 2014.
Israel's aggressive policies are unacceptable, and Palestinians will resist these inhumane policies. The Israeli announcement to deny vaccines to Gaza is totally unacceptable. The resistance groups will remain steadfast in their fight against the occupation and have prepared themselves for all possible scenarios.
This comes as Israeli Health Ministry has said over a quarter of Israel's population have received the vaccine since December 19. Human rights groups have accused Israeli regime of violating the basic rights of Palestinians.
Since the coronavirus outbreak in the Gaza Strip, Israeli regime has sought through all possible means to pressurize the resistance groups into sitting back. Israel has announced that no aid is allowed in the Gaza Strip without the release of their captured soldiers. Palestinians will never accept such a thing, and the Israeli occupation knows this well. Israel is now showing its racist face to the world by announcing this illegal and inhumane policy.
For their own part, Palestinian resistance groups in the Strip have said they will not sit back, adding release of Israeli soldiers should come through a just prisoner swap deal.
We announced that Israeli attempts to pressurize the resistance front into releasing its captured soldiers won't succeed. We are after a fair swap deal. We won't give in to pressure. Israel's attempts to tie vaccine entrance to soldier release will fail.
Earlier, the United Nations called on the Israeli regime to help ensure Palestinians will receive COVID-19 vaccinations amid the coronavirus pandemic, stressing that the pandemic has taken a heavy toll on the occupied Palestinian territories. The UN said the cost of lives and livelihoods there remain high, particularly in the Gaza Strip.
Israel's move to deny vaccine to the Palestinians comes as over 156,000 Palestinians have been infected with coronavirus and more than 1,800 have lost their lives so far. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Joint military drills involving the U.S. and South Korea are scheduled to go ahead this spring, says South Korea's Minister of Defense and military officials under U.S. President Joe Biden. But nearly 400 NGOs around the world have signed a joint statement calling for the drills to be scrapped in the hopes of improving relations with North Korea and promoting a lasting peace. The annual exercises, some of which are computer-simulated war games, are viewed by Pyongyang as a threat and a rehearsal for invasion. The joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises have been suspended before in the early 1990s as Washington sought to improve relations with Pyongyang. Previous U.S. President Donald Trump also scaled back the drills following his first summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in 2018. The North's Kim then pledged to suspend nuclear and long-range missile testing, with subsequent meetings between Kim and Trump failing to yield results or much for North Korea in return for its moratorium. U.S.-led sanctions against Pyongyang remain in place. South Korea keeps buying more advanced U.S. weapons, and now more military exercises are planned. Some activists view the war drills as counterproductive.
The South Korea-U.S. joint exercises fail to contribute to maintaining peace. Rather, it has been conducted in a way that threatens peace on the Korean Peninsula. It's now even more important because it's the beginning of the new Biden government in the United States and what signals can give to North Korea at this point.
North Korea has continued developing other military technologies, introducing a submarine-launched ballistic missile at a recent military parade. While seemingly committed to the drills, new U.S. officials have said they're reviewing North Korea policy, as experts call on Pyongyang to be patient. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Will Switzerland ban the burqa? That is the question being asked by many Swiss Muslims ahead of an upcoming referendum, which seeks a total ban on all face coverings in public. If successful, Muslim women who wear Islamic face veils will be banned from doing so after March the 7th.
Now, the text in the proposal doesn't mention Muslim face veils per se, only stating that no one shall wear face coverings in public spaces. However, the group behind the proposal includes members of right-wing political parties who were behind the already successful bid to ban Islamic minarets from being erected across the country in 2009.
In response, local Muslim activists have begun a Save the Niqab campaign to challenge the hate.
Islamophobia is as spread in Switzerland as everywhere in Europe. We know that there is a realistic chance for the niqab ban to be passed.
A representative explained why the ban would set a dangerous precedent.
Since the referendum was already signed by more than 100,000 voters to be even admitted at the to the ballot, and a recent poll suggests that 64% of voters will vote in favor of a ban, the law is highly to be passed. Adding such an Islamophobic and discriminatory ban to the Swiss constitution, which dictates to women how they should dress, exposes Switzerland to internal, or I would say international ridicule, and fundamentally contradicts the liberal and pluralistic values that this country is so fond of propagating. And if we were to ban everything that might been out of force, then we would most likely ban a lot of things and not only the niqab.
Islamophobia has penetrated deep into Swiss society, with a recent poll finding that 63% of those questioned would vote in favour of a burqa ban, leaving Swiss Muslims with little hope. Robert Carter, London.
The American aggression and the blockade on Yemen are terrorist crimes is the motto of a press conference held by the Intisaf Organization for the Rights of Women and the Children. The conference highlighted the crimes and violations committed by the Saudi-led coalition against Yemeni children and women with American support.
The crimes and violations committed by the U.S. against the people of Yemen are too many and cannot be counted. There is, for example, the crime of targeting children in Dahyan in Sada and the crime of targeting women in weddings in Wajiha, Ahrab and Samban, and these are war crimes for sure.
The Minister of Human Rights said that designating Ansarullah as a terrorist organization confirms that the American participation went beyond arms sales, military and logistical support, and reached providing political cover and justifying the crimes of its Saudi ally.
The classification of Ansarullah as a terrorist organization is an American green light for Saudi Arabia to continue its aggression against Yemen and also to feed terrorism and terrorist groups, as happened in Al-Baida. When the Yemeni army found weapons with the logo of the United States Agency for International Development and also for the sake of covering and evading its crimes in Yemen.
The Saudi war on Yemen has killed hundreds of thousands of people and displaced millions of others. The country is suffering from a humanitarian situation that was described by the United Nations as the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Yemenis unanimously agree that the U.S. is a major complicit in the war crimes committed against Yemeni children and women, which necessitates placing its name on the top of the list of states sponsoring terrorism. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
The UK has used slogans to raise awareness during the pandemic. One of its most popular is Stay Home, Protect the NHS, Save Lives. Some government messaging has been comforting as well as informative, but it's become more and more intense, with TV ads showing people dying and incessant radio ads claiming joggers and people working outdoors are highly likely to have the disease.
Stick to the rules. If you bend the rules, people will die. Stay home, protect the NHS. I'm
grateful. The government is now under pressure to pull this ad after Number 10 was condemned by MPs and public health experts for spreading false information. Parents worry they will affect their children. Surely this messaging could be really damaging to vulnerable people and is irresponsible. Telling five-year-olds if someone bends the rules, people will die seems really inappropriate. We need sensible messaging. They should not be saying people will die. We are heading for a huge mental health crisis in this country. And experts agree. 10 of the UK's top experts in child health say anxiety, self-harm and suicidal thoughts have reached frightening levels among children. Pediatricians are urging the government to reopen schools or risk a calamitous impact on children's mental health. Boris Johnson says he understands the concerns surrounding the mental health of young people, but it all relies on the vaccine.
If we achieve our target of vaccinating everyone in the four most vulnerable groups with their first dose by the 15th of February, and every passing day sees more progress towards that goal, then those groups that have developed immunity from the virus about 3 weeks later, that is by the 8th of March, we hope it will therefore be safe to begin the reopening of schools from Monday, the 8th of March.
Adults themselves are struggling. There has been a surge in people afraid to leave the house. Alcohol consumption has gone up, and helplines say calls regarding domestic abuse have increased many times over.
Health services in the UK say as a result of the pandemic, at least 10 million people are going to need some form of mental health support. And with no real end in sight for the lockdowns and the virus itself, more and more people are losing hope. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Iranian cultural figures, artists from different countries, as well as envoys of the foreign states, attended the closing ceremony of the biggest calligraphy event, which was held in Jondishapur Library, west of Tehran. Some of the artists also performed calligraphy live, while the audience could watch their expertise. The exhibition aims at convening countries which have olden historical civilizations. Artworks from Silk Road countries, including Pakistan, Egypt, India, Tajikistan, Iraq, Tunisia, Algeria, and Afghanistan, were put on show both virtually and also physically with limited number of visitors due to the pandemic. The organizers noted that as the works were in different languages, it was not possible to judge them.
Iranian National Commission for UNESCO decided to hold this festival to enhance cultural proximity among countries. We started the preliminary phases since 1.5 years ago. Almost 1,000 works from different countries were received by the secretariat. As the works were written in different languages, we could not judge them. So we decided to choose the winners randomly.
Veteran calligraphers also noted that calligraphy is a heritage that must always be preserved.
Calligraphy works by 203 artists from 30 countries have been showcased in the exhibition, which officially opened on January 20th in the northeastern Iranian city of Mashhad, Humayun Abadi, Tehran.
With the new U.S. administration taking the helm at the White House, many express optimism that the 2015 Iran nuclear deal will be back on the board. But comments by U.S. officials have raised doubts over the optimism. On Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Washington will meet its commitments under the Iran nuclear deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, only after Tehran returns to full compliance with the JCPOA. Blinken said the U.S. wants to start meeting its obligations again, but Iran needs to act first. He said Washington would seek to build a longer and stronger accord to address what he called deeply problematic issues. He, however, noted that it will take a long time for the U.S. to return to the deal. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif was quick to react, saying it is the United States that should return to its obligations under the 2015 Iran nuclear deal first. Zarif recalled it was Washington who violated the nuclear agreement, prevented supplies of food and medicine to Iran, and punished countries which abided by UN Security Council Resolution 2231. Therefore, it's the U.S. that should take the first step. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pulled his country out of the JCPOA in May 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Tehran as part of his so-called maximum pressure policy against the Islamic Republic. Iran waited for a year and gave leeway to the European signatories, Britain, France, and Germany, to make up for the U.S. move. They, however, failed to live up to their commitments. Iran then reacted by scaling back on its commitments under the accord. Tehran says it has lost trust in the Western members of the deal, and it will only revoke its measures after the U.S. removes its sanctions. On Tuesday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov echoed a similar position, stressing that the United States must remove its sanctions against Iran and comply with the 2015 nuclear deal, as it was Washington that withdrew from the accord. Some experts say Biden has been a warmonger and is not going to return into a pacifist overnight.
I mean, the point being that virtually everything he has done has been imperialist. He's a chief warmonger for the U.S. government. He is not going to turn into a pacifist and a logical statesman who cares about the well-being of people in the world. I mean, he's just never done that. And he's always been intimate with the defense industry. He has long-standing ties with the defense industry.
With the Biden administration not showing any practical and real interest in returning to the deal, questions arise as whether he will follow in his predecessor's track and maintain his anti-Iran pressure campaign, or will it put an end to its malign policy against Tehran, as Iran foreign minister put it. Iran, on the other hand, says the window of opportunity is closing very fast.
The steadfastness of Yemen and the resistance of Palestinians is the slogan of a press conference held by the Yemen Palestine Organization. Participants discussed Yemeni-Palestinian relations and their common vision, which is resistance against the Zionist projects in the region.
This event is a Yemeni-Palestinian initiative for political awakening and for the unity of both nations to achieve a common goal of defeating the Israeli regime's plans in the region and liberation of Palestine. Israel is our common enemy and the enemy of Muslim nations.
The participants affirmed that Yemen and Palestine have strong ties that transcend geographical borders, as Yemen has become an important part of the axis of resistance. The Yemen-Palestine Organization also revealed its humanitarian plan for 2021, which will contribute to alleviating the suffering of Yemenis due to the continuing war and the blockade imposed by the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition. Yemenis believe that the U.S., as the main supporter of Israel, is also responsible for the sufferings of Palestinians and Yemenis. They say resistance is the only way to achieve victory and liberation. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The very first revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
جانم تپشم سخنم باشد وطنم وطنم ای خان که گوهر خیز بهره وطنم قدمم عشقم سخنم قسمم از عاشقی لبری.
Congratulations on the victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution.
Imam Khomeini, beloved leader. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, today is the first day of the 10 days dawn, which marks the period in which the Islamic Revolution of the Iranian people triumphed over the oppressive Pahlavi regime and put an end to 2,500 years of tyranny and oppression for good. 12 of Bahman, or February 1st, 1979, was the day on which the beloved leader of the Iranian people, Imam Khomeini, returned home from exile and accelerated the struggles against the remnants of the regime. Stay tuned for the first episode of this series, which deals briefly with the character of the Imam and the unmatched love of the people towards him. Imam Khomeini returned home after 15 years of exile with indescribable glory and magnanimity. When his plane landed, hearts started to beat strongly as people were impatiently waiting to meet their beloved leader. The distance of Mehrabad Airport to Behesht-e-Zahra Cemetery had been ornamented with flowers, and people were standing in several kilometers to see him. As the door of the Boeing 747 opened, Imam Khomeini appeared on the steps, as if rain was falling on thirsty souls. Ruhollah came, and a new chapter began. The Iranian nation found the call of truth in Imam's voice. They really felt that he was honest in fighting injustice and corruption. They saw that a man of Imam Hussein's descent had come to revive religious values even at the cost of his life and captivity of his family. That's why they accepted his call and struggled against tyranny and sacrificed their life in his way. The Islamic Revolution shone like a sun on dormant hearts and breathed new spirit in the corpse of society which had become wary of oppression, discrimination, corruption, and evil. Since day one, Imam Khomeini taught the people that to cry the motto of independence, freedom, and Islamic Republic on the basis of the principle of neither East nor West, Islamic is the best. Sayyid Murtaza Avini, whom Ayatollah Khamenei called as the master of the men of letters, described Imam Khomeini in one of his books as follows. Imam Khomeini was not a new messenger, but he was among the reminders, who reminded people of their innate covenant with God. And after centuries of mankind's collective decadence, just like his predecessors, Abraham, Ishmael, and Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, broke an era of ignorance and initiated another era. Dear friends, Imam Khomeini, like his pure forefathers, was in pursuit of training and expurgation of individuals and society. God makes it clear in the Quran that government and politics are not separate from morality and human virtues. Verse 21 of chapter Ahzab reads, "In the apostle of Allah there is certainly for you a good exemplar." Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the best role model of an Islamic governor. After him, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, demonstrated the most beautiful manifestations of social justice and human magnanimity in the Islamic governance. Imam Khomeini too strove to revive and promote religious values in society. He possessed the lofty merits of an Islamic ruler himself. Since his adolescence, he had tried hard to train his soul in full conformity with moralities and piety. His classmates and friends all testified that He was an embodiment of human virtues. They focused on two characteristics in the Imam, namely midnight vigil for prayer and supplication at the divine court and serious refraining from backbiting or listening to backbiting. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, was a very truthful and honest man. He was an example of Imam Ali's word. Honesty is the strongest support of faith. Whatever Imam Khomeini preached, he would do it himself. If he advised the officials to lead a simple life, he had a simple life himself. In fact, his honesty was the main factor for people's endless love for him. Imam Khomeini would say, "If you call me servant, it would be better than calling me leader." Imam Khomeini would pay a lot of attention to the poor and the deprived classes. He used to remind the officials to be at the service of the poor and the oppressed. Once he said, "It is our duty and the duty of all officials to serve these people and share their sorrows, happiness, and problems. I don't think there is any worship better than serving the deprived." Ayatollah Khamenei says, "There were three beliefs in the Imam which gave him decisiveness, courage, and steadfastness. The belief in God, the belief in people, and the belief in himself. These three beliefs were manifest in the true sense of the word, in being Imam and all his moves." Dear listeners, Imam Khomeini was a real Gnostic, but he had not isolated himself from the society. He was in the middle of developments and enjoyed a very high political acumen. He was a very charismatic, disciplinary, and orderly figure. Since his youth, he had prepared a table for his daily affairs and had arranged his hours in an exact order. His pupils and classmates say that he was so orderly and on time that they could say the hour according to his activities. One of his daughters, Zahra Mustafavi, says, "The Imam was so exact and orderly that if he delayed 5 minutes for lunch, everybody at home would be worried." Let us end this program with the remarks of Ayatollah Khamenei on Imam Khomeini. "The reason why a word of our great Imam had an astonishing impact on the vast atmosphere of the country was his spirituality, his inward purity, his bond and connection with God, his midnight tears. That iron man, the man who would not move by events and harms which could move a nation, the man in whose eyes the awe and pomp of the global powers were not, used to shed tears humbly before the divine greatness."
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and He's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. To all our brothers and sisters across the world, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. The program is Islamic Upbringing, where we discuss problems and questions that parents face in the Islamic upbringing of their children. Our answers today are mostly based on the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And to help us with our questions, we have our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom. As always, it's very nice to have you here, Brother Miqdad. Salaam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salaam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much.
So continuing from last episode, the question was about a family who was economically okay, but one of the parents wanted to have a single child. On the last episode, we talked about the importance of having siblings in emotional intelligence and social intelligence and learning how to deal with life. When you have siblings, you're going to be cheated on and you're going to learn to be smarter in real life. You're going to learn to take care of your children. Can you please explain more about the disadvantages of a single child policy?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Let me start with this beautiful hadith from the Holy Prophet in our book. This is hadith number 395. The Prophet says that I love children for five things. The first one is because they cry a lot. The second is because they play with sand. The third is that because they fight without hatred, or without grudges, basically. This is something that is learned in a family with many children, right? You see children, they fight all the time, brothers, sisters, siblings. They fight with one another, and then the next moment they're playing together again. You think that that's it. They're not going to speak to them. They're not going to speak to each other for the whole day. But all of a sudden, lo and behold, and they're just friends and playing as if nothing happened. This is very characteristic of children. And what happens is that this is the place where they're learning very, very important emotional skills, very important life skills that they will need, basically, whether it's how to behave in situations of anger, how to behave in situations of problem, how to solve conflicts, how to sacrifice and let go of certain things, how to forgive. All these skills are not learned at school. They're not learned by constantly seeing your mom and dad. Only child is constantly dealing with mom and dad, right? Seeking attention from mom and dad only. You're not going to learn these skills there, basically. You need siblings, you need brothers and sisters under one roof, spending the whole day together to learn all these skills. And this is, again, experience has shown as well. If you look out there, you'll see children who have grown in big families, they're usually very, they have social skills, their emotional intelligence is a bit stronger, they're able to control their anger, their solving problem skills is greater. This is a natural way of learning, basically. This is how Allah has made it, basically, that you start your journey surrounded by siblings, brothers and sisters, and these skills are picked up there.
Of course, we're talking about families that are economically able, or in every other way, they are able to have a lot of children. But for instance, if a family understands that having more than a child will trouble them so much that they'll find it a challenge to offer proper education to their children, then the situation may differ depending on the condition that they're in.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break, and we'll be back after the break for more discussions.
IRIB English Radio presents a priceless gift to parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing with Brother Miqdad. And we're talking about a single child policy in the family, the disadvantages. And the presumption here is that we're talking about a family who is economically and in every other way ready. I mean, they don't have a problem for having several children. Another disadvantage that comes to mind is a single child's dependency on his parents. Are single children significantly more dependent, attached to their parents, than children who have siblings?
They're more demanding from their parents, right? It's interesting because parents usually have only one child because they feel that it's less demanding, and because having more children is much more difficult. You'll have to stay awake all night much more, and you'll have to feed them and dress them, and etc., etc. You feel that it's much more burden, basically. I'd like to turn around and say, actually, it becomes much more easier when you have more children. The more children you have, the easier it gets. Children don't require constant attention from their parents. They don't want to play constantly with their parents because they've got siblings to play with, right? They learn their skills much quicker, right? You'll be spending months, weeks and months perhaps teaching a child to go to the bathroom, to potty train, go away from nappies to underwears, to eat properly on their plate without spilling everywhere, right? That's going to take weeks and months sometimes. You put three siblings in there and suddenly they're picking up these skills like within days, right? By copying, by just doing exactly what their brothers and sisters are doing, by helping one another, and it actually facilitates and makes it so much easier for the parent that you don't even realize. So coming back to the point that you mentioned, it's actually less demanding from parents when you have more than one child.
Okay, I think we have to move on. What other disadvantages can you name about single child policy?
Another thing is that a child, we talked about needs of children, right? And one of the important needs a child has is social need, right? So children within themselves have this, and this is all human beings, have the need to be social and to interact with children of their own ages, or peers, basically, right? If this doesn't happen at home, then what happens is that home becomes very dark and gloomy and a place where my needs are not met. And remember what we said, that if you want to do therapy, if you want to do good upbringing of children, you need a home that fulfills all the needs of a child. So having a lone child is actually making your house and your family a place where all needs are not met. There are many needs that are left blank. And this is why you find that lone children, the moment you send them a lot to school or to their friend's house, etc., they actually never want to come home. They actually dislike coming home. Home is actually a prison for them. Especially children that are very social, very outgoing, they have then this needs of social is even greater. They don't enjoy being at home. Home is not fun. Fun is that with all my friends at their house, etc. And you can try and buy them the best of toys and the most expensive of bicycles and games. It still doesn't meet that need that they have of being around.
They need a child around.
Exactly. They need friends around. They need brothers and sisters around.
Okay, let's take a break now, and we'll be back after the break for more on this topic. Don't go away.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "Increase your children, for tomorrow I will boast of your abundance over other nations."
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about a single child policy in the family and the disadvantages of that. So before the break, you were saying that children become very bored if they're alone at home, to such an extent that home becomes boring and school becomes fun. Or not school, anywhere else outside of home becomes fun. Can you continue on your discussion?
What happens is that alone children, only child, they lose their sense of security and sense of tranquility at home as well. See, when you're in a group of friends together, there's a sense of tranquility, there's a sense of safety that is built, right? When you're around your peers and your siblings together. This sense is not achieved at home with a lone child, with a lonely child. So a sense of tranquility is not achieved in children that lone children are the only child in the family. And we've seen levels of stress and anxiety in children and caused by this very factor that I don't have any brother or sister. I look around and I feel that there's something missing in my life. There's a gap that I don't feel, that I can't fill. And this is because I don't have a brother or a sister. And therefore, this is another consequence that can come by having a lone child. Lastly, and there's quite a few as well that we can still mention, talk about whether it's influence from animations and cartoons and movies and video games out there, whether it's information from school, etc., from friends out there. When you have a big family, you don't need to have so many friends out there that would then bring influence to your house. There's so many other things that we can talk about, and we've talked about previously as well. I just want to mention one thing over here in very passing, and inshallah we can move on. And this is that many of the issues and challenges that come due to attraction to the opposite gender, due to sexual desires, for example, that come at a stage after 10, for example, in girls and boys, many of them can be solved by having a brother of the opposite gender. These can be solved by having a brother and a sister, basically. If a boy has a sister, many of the things that a boy wants to find out about a girl, or the kind of things that come from a girl, basically, he finds in his sister, in a non-sexual way, obviously. He finds in his sister, doesn't need to go to that level of, until for a longer time, basically. But if you're a lone child, you don't have a brother and a sister, the attraction of the opposite gender and those effects that come with having a relationship with a opposite gender comes much quicker. And the need for that appears much, much quicker. So a lot of the issues of teenagehood are solved from Muslim parents are solved when you have a brother and sister that you can rely on, basically.
Like, for instance, the need to talk to someone.
Exactly, of the opposite gender. Obviously, the reaction that my sister will give me is very different to what my friends will give, right? So if I have a sister to talk to, she'll give me things that actually will satisfy a particular need in me that I don't have to go and find a girl out there to talk about.
Thank you very much, Brother Maghdad. As always, it's been very nice talking to you. So we talked about some of the disadvantages of raising lone children. We talked about the need for siblings for emotional intelligence, for social intelligence. We talked about how single children become more demanding and how the more children you have, relatively less pressure there is on parents, because the children play with each other, they watch out for each other, they accept responsibilities over each other. All of this is things which are burdens that are taken off the shoulders of the parents. And finally, we talked about how there are some needs that every child has, not necessarily sexual, but related to the opposite gender, like talking to someone, which siblings can provide. Thank you very much, Brother Maghdad. That's all the time that we have, and thanks to our wonderful audience who are always with us. Okay, we're really out of time. If you missed the program, don't worry, you can always download an archive of this episode and our previous episodes. Simply visit www.parstoday.com, that's parstoday.com, and find us on the Call of Islam radio page. You can also email us at englishradio@irib.ir, that's englishradio@irib.ir. And until next episode, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned, perfect with no flaws at all, are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.